I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we are going to start in Gulgong.
We're still in Gulgong,
and we're going to be talking from Chris. Now, she is in charge of the Holtermann Museum, the Photographic Museum.
Yes, that is an amazing place. All those photo images from way back in the 1800s.
Absolutely fascinating. And boy, doesn't Chris know all about the about those photographs and those glass plates. And then straight after that, I'm going to be chatting with our regular Jeff Dieth, and he's going to be telling us all about the importance of ball weights.
Okay, that's an interesting one.
Well, it is, and it's, I guess it was because we had a caller email us last week asking us about whether he should tow his caravan with his water tanks full or not.
Mm-hmm.
And this one has progressed from that one, okay?
Right,
so the importance of ball weights.
Yep.
So, Lynn, apart from that, we've also got this great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So what do you think, Lynn?
On with the show.
Hello, listeners. My name is Phil C and we're Roaming Oz. If you've just joined us, we're in the town of Gulgong and I'm chatting with Chris and she is from the Gulgong Holtermann Museum. How are you today, Chris?
I'm well. Welcome, Phil. Welcome to the museum.
Thank you so much for having us. Tell us a little bit about the town of Gulgong first, because we're standing in the main street. Is this the main street at the moment?
This is the main street of Gulgong, and you might notice the beautiful curbstones that are original and the way the town has been set up so that it actually looks like what it looked like during the gold rush days.
Okay, which is going back
to 1870.
Wow.
Gold was discovered here in 1870 by Phil Saunders up on Red Hill.
Okay.
One morning when he walked after rain, there the gold was on the ground, shining in front of him. And of course, within 5 years of him finding gold here, there were 20,000 people on this gold field.
Okay, that's an awful amount of people. Now, what's the population of Gulgong now?
Well, currently about 2,400, and it's a growing, prosperous town.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about you firstly in relation to the Holtermann Museum. How long have you been here?
Oh, I'm a Sydney girl who fell in love with this town when we drove through about 30 years ago.
Okay.
And been here probably about 28 years now.
Right.
And I am the coordinator of the Gulgong Holtermann Museum.
Wow. Okay. Mm. So how long have you been with this particular museum?
Well, we've only been open since the 26th of October 2019. So since it opened.
So it's a very new museum.
It is. And it's a museum because the purpose was to save the two most important buildings in this town.
Okay.
The Greatest Wonder of the World and the American Tobacco Warehouse. These two buildings had reached a point where they were in danger of losing them.
Okay.
And a committee of local people got together.
Right.
And purchased the buildings, and then it was a 5-year community project to save them.
We're walking into
the American Tobacco Warehouse.
Okay.
Now, the American Tobacco Warehouse, something of interest, was one of the photos on the original $10 note.
Okay, all right.
So, and here you have it here. Now, the original $10 note was set up, the paper one, with Gulgong, Henry Lawson, and a range of images that were taken from what was called the Holtermann Collection of Photographs.
Okay.
Now, the difference on the $10 note is that it reads the American, it doesn't read the American Tobacco Warehouse, it reads the Gulgong Dispensary.
Right.
And the reason is by law you can't have another country's name on your currency.
I
had a local visitor suggest to me the other day it might be the word tobacco, but back in 1870 it didn't really matter.
No.
Now, the buildings, as I said, it was a 5-year project to save these buildings, community project. And in the end, the decision was to actually create it into what is called the Gulgong Holtermann Museum.
Okay.
Now, the Gulgong Holtermann, the reason that is because these two photos were photographed in either June or July 1872 by Beaufoy Merlin, who was the photographer.
Okay.
And he was he was travelling through the Central West photographing towns and the people in towns. And, of course, therefore, he photographed these two really important buildings. Mm-hmm. Now, you might wonder why it's called the Halterman Museum.
Yes.
Halterman became involved after the Gulgong photos were taken.
Right.
But he had left... He had left Germany to escape the draft,
yep.
and he ended up in Hill End, where his company found a nugget that would be in today's money worth about $8.3
million.
Now, it's always been called the Halterman Nugget,
yes.
but the fact is it was a conglomerate. Now, what then occurred was he was a keen photographer,
right.
and he ended up working with Merlin and the other photographer, Bayliss,
yes.
and they weren't photographing just Gold Rush areas, they were photographing both regional centres in Sydney and Melbourne.
Okay.
And what then occurred was, those photographs were being used by the government to in fact actually exhibit overseas to improve immigration.
Right.
Now, that set of photographs or glass plates were lost.
Okay.
And then in 1951, Keist Burke, who ran Kodak in Sydney,
yes.
did some research, and they were rediscovered in a back shed in one of the Halterman houses in Chatswood.
Right.
There are 3,500 glass plates in the collection.
Okay.
They are the property of the State Library,
yes.
and they are so important that they are UNESCO listed.
Okay.
So, of course, the two buildings you've been looked at were photographed in 1872 as part of that collection.
Okay.
So when it came to decide what to, in fact, actually use these buildings for, obviously it comes to the fact that they're used to actually display the Halterman collection of photographs.
Okay.
Our major sponsor is the State Library.
Right.
And the State Library worked with us to curate what we have here and have given us access to as many images as we would like. We currently are displaying 540 Halterman images, not just on the walls but on touch screens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a technology-based museum.
Okay, fabulous.
So let me take you through and into the second building, the second Halterman building, well, it's a Halterman photograph building,
right.
which is the greatest wonder of the world.
Okay.
Now, I need to give you to each of these. I'll just put them on. Oops. Okay, you don't need to take them.
No.
So, because of COVID, etc., just as a bit of extra protection,
yes.
We ask you to in fact, actually put two finger stalls on your fingers.
Okay.
The reason is that when you go onto the touch screens,
of course.
You can actually enlarge
photos. Oh, right. So we can enlarge
the
images.
Yes, so now you're coming in to the second building, which is the greatest wonder of the world.
Right.
And when you look at the front of that building, you see that they sold a range of products. We now have it set up so that it actually tells you all about the photographers and the museum tells you about the photographers and the photographic process, which was called wet plate collodion, which was invented in 1853.
Right.
Now, but let me take you over here and show you.
Yes.
This amazing section here.
Right.
Here you are looking at the first official photograph ever, panorama ever taken in the world, and it is of Sydney Harbour.
And yes,
you can see it's taken as a series of photographs. There were two other panoramas taken of Sydney,
right.
One from the top of the GPO and another one from what was the Crystal Palace, which was down in the Domain at the time. Now, in order to do this, they didn't have the ability to enlarge photos at the time. So if you took a photo the size of a quarter plate, which is quite small, that's the size of the photo you would get. If you wanted a larger photo, you had to have larger glass plates. Now, here are the size of the plates for the panorama. This particular one and this mammoth plate here. This one was 30 kilos of shop front glass and a tower built in the top of his house and was purpose built to create that panorama. So you can imagine the size of the camera. that was used to create that particular these particular images. This was taken in 1875. Now let me show you how these touchscreens work, because it's really interesting.
Let's have a look at the touchscreens for the.
Okay, so all our touchscreens look like this. You might want to take a photo.
Okay. Yep.
And when you actually hit one of those there, using you can take them up to look like this.
Okay.
Now that's a view of Sydney Harbour from Lavender Bay.
Right.
Taken in 1875. Look what I can do. Now.
Oh wow.
Here's where the Harbour Bridge is today.
Amazing, right?
There's Government House there. That's where the Opera House is.
Wow.
And you can move these around and you can find all the amazing clarity and detail. Things that you could not do today because it would pixelate.
Absolutely.
If you would take it. Take it to the point where you can take that up and you can see what that sign is, St Leonard's Public School.
St Leonard's Public School.
Of course, that is now North Sydney. St Leonard's is a little higher.
Yes.
When you look at these ones that we have here on the screen, they're taken from quarter plate.
Right, okay.
You could not do that today.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's just an amazing amount of images that we have all the way through.
So how many images do you have throughout the entire?
About 540.
About 540.
Yes, yes. That's as I said. They are. You can go online and you can access these images from the State Library.
Okay.
They obviously they have a cost. They are, as I said, they are our sponsor. They actually allow us to use these. We get these. We have these, you know, showing for no cost from the State Library.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
So what else is there to see in here? Because this is a fabulous. I had no idea what to expect, Chris, when I walked in the door.
No.
For the benefit of our listeners, this is definitely something to see. Alrighty, Chris. Look, this place is absolutely fascinating, and we've only just touched on it. We've only been chatting for about 15 minutes, but I don't want to stop you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song by Bob Campbell because I know he's your favourite. And we'll be back with more of you straight after that.
I think that's a good idea because I still have lots to tell you.
I know you do. All right, listeners, we'll stick around because we've just hit the surface of this fabulous museum and we're going to be back with more of the Holtman Museum straight after this song by Bob Campbell.
Of liberty, and listen to my song. I'll tell you my observations. It won't take very long. I fossicked around this continent 500 miles or more, and it's many's the time I might have snubbed. But for the cheek I bore, I've been on all the diggings since famous Ballarat. I've long tommed on the Lachlan, I've fossicked a lambing flat. So you will understand it just from my little rhyme. Aji Gong gold miner and one of the good old time. I went to the Fitzroy River, all with my Bendigo rig. I had a long shovel, a pick and a pan, and for a license I beg. But the assayman called me a loafer, said for work I'd no desire, and so to do him justice, I set his office afire. Oh yes, my jolly jokers, I've done it on the cross. Although I carry my bluey now, I've sweated many's a horse. To rob the escort of many's an ounce of gold, and the traps of have often chased me tail more times than I've ever told. Oh yes, the traps have chased me and been frightened out of their stripes. They never would have caught me, for they feared my cure for gripes. And well they knew I carried it, they could plainly see it, a-glistening in my flipper, my patent pill machine. I'm one of the men who cradled on the reef at Tower and Gower. Anxiety and misery were my grim companions there. I paddled the clay at Bendigo, and I've chanced my arm at Kew, and I wound up my observations with 10 years on Cockatoo. Diggins, since famous Ballarat, I've long tommed on the Lachlan, I bossicked a lambing flat. So you will understand it, yes, from my little rhyme. I'm a Kajigong gold miner, and I'm one of the good old times.
Oh, well, there you go. That was going out to Chris, who loves Bob Campbell. The song is called Golgong Song. And now we're back with more of Chris at the Holtman Museum.
In this particular gallery, as I said, it actually talks about the photographic processes and the photographers. But and on the walls you have the life of those photographers. And also we have in this one a cart. Or the back of a cart. Okay. And the reason is, as you will now see on the screen here,
yes.
When Merlin was travelling, he had to take his dark room with him. because you actually need to be able to prepare the plates, and then actually, then after you've taken your photo, which takes 8 seconds,
yes.
You then, excuse me, have to then, after you prepared your plate, you have to process that plate pretty quickly.
Okay.
So you had to have a cart. Now, these people were using chemicals that were, when you look at the processing kit, that were in fact actually quite, if I go into a collodion, it's going to actually tell you that all these things, a lot of them were incredibly dangerous.
Okay.
And they had no knowledge that of how dangerous these things were. So if you come over here and you look at this,
yes,
picture of Merlin here, and he was there, he was looking like he was cutting edge in terms of his ability to actually create photography. He was an amazing man. But you walk up here and have a look at Merlin. Have a look at Merlin here. Then he looks like a very elderly man, and yet he died at the age of 43.
What did he die from?
Well, as you see, it says here. Where does it say?
Oh, there it is.
Yes.
Inflammation of the lungs.
But how much of that was impacted by the chemicals, that he was using?
Yes. Of course.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
they didn't know.
No, they absolutely didn't know what they were using. But you can see that is in fact actually a huge difference in those two photos.
Absolutely.
We were talking about Holtman's nugget before. As you can see, it is a conglomerate.
Wow.
And it had to be broken apart in order.
630 pounds.
Yes, of gold.
Average thickness 4 inches. Wow, that's unimaginable in today's.
Yes. Today. So let's walk through into the courtyard. So we're walking out into our courtyard.
Okay.
And one of the things that has been done here, we're going out of the original buildings to the newer section of the museum.
Right.
So we were very fortunate to have a student from Sydney University design this complex so that it actually fitted in with the older buildings, but is in itself new and incorporated things like stone from the hospital that was pulled down and the bricks, you know, they are from the hospital or from the chimney that had to be removed because it was so unstable here.
Okay. So it's a new building, but it's so this is with the original building.
Exactly. So when you're coming into this gallery, it's all about the Gold Rush period, and also all about how they would do portraits. Now, if you look around, you'll see that the people are very static in the way they're very stiff, and nobody's smiling, because it takes 8 seconds at least to expose to do the exposure, and that in itself would have been terribly difficult. You can't smile successfully for that length of time without actually moving, and you couldn't move in these photos. You might also see that these people here, there's always a prop.
Yes.
To in fact actually to hold the people up. You might notice this lovely little girl here standing so beautifully.
Yes.
And so still, but they would have the back of her head clamped.
Really?
To in fact actually keep her still. A little bit later I'll show you one of those clamps.
One of those clamps?
Yes, how that works. But you can see that they would carry in the cart that you just saw, they would also be carrying things like the props and things. Now, this may be the only photograph you ever had taken in your life.
Okay.
It would be that important to you. And it would be so important because you would wear your best clothes.
Yes.
You would be sitting so beautifully and carefully. And then you would often bring out your most important possession that you would own. So see this lovely lady in her bark hut? Here she is, and what she's brought out is her sewing machine.
Okay.
Which in fact actually is, you know, which again, says that that's so important to her. She's still got her best clothes on and a hat and everything else, but she's sitting next to her.
Next to her most prized possession.
Yes. So many of these ones, of course, on the gold fields at that particular time. This particular photo up there, that's of Henry Lawson's mother and his aunt Phoebe and his brother Charles. There are historical figures that were photographed as part of this particular collection. But it gives you not only what life was like in that particular period, and you can look at it and you can see who's doing okay, who is struggling, and the style of life, because the gold fields here in Gulgong, we're not on a river, and they sold water by the bucket because it was such a precious commodity. It was life was incredibly difficult for these people. I particularly love the story of Anne and Spiro, and a lot of what you talk about when you talk about life on the gold fields, you talk about the fact that people lived on damper and tea, but obviously they didn't. But then again, how many people would have been able to afford that? That would be a luxury. But when you look at Anne's dress there, you can see it's torn.
Yes.
Now, Spiro was Greek, and his surname was Benetos, changed to Bennett. And they had come from Brisbane, and they had 3 children. And they arrived here, and she lost more, we think, two children. There's a bit of dispute about that because they registered two births within 6 months.
Oh.
But there were three children, or either two or three children born, but only one, Chani left with one of those. Oh, okay. Either one or two of those children died.
Okay.
And she wanted to go back to Brisbane, but she never did. They ended up on another goldfield and she died. And then Spiro then went to Sydney and had another whole family and died in Sydney. But you can see also that there were many Chinese on the goldfields.
Yes.
And yes. This, of course, is Sun Tong Lee's Sydney branch store. Now, of course, what had happened is at Lambing Flats, right, down before this goldfield, there had been riots by the Europeans because of the number of Chinese on the goldfields.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the government had supported the Europeans and Chinese could not have licences on the goldfields.
Okay.
So they ran the stores, etc. That doesn't mean they didn't look for gold here. There are other sort of hidden fields.
Okay.
Outside Golgong,
okay,
where they were likely to have been. But this particular story of Sun Tong Lee is one of those absolutely beautiful ones where he showed concern for people who were struggling, okay, as a lot of these people were. I particularly love this one here of the saw pit because it shows you that, the difficulty and the... I know the fellow underneath has a name. Is he the dogman? I'm trying to think what his name is. It has a special name, the person on the bottom of that's, in the pit itself.
Yes.
I will have to go and think about that. Yep. But when you start looking about what could be purchased in Golgong at that particular time, well, if you come up here, then you can look. Up here there is an oyster bar.
Oh,
where's the oyster bar? Yes.
Here we go.
Yeah. There's an oyster bar. Now, you think of the time that it would have taken to get those oysters across from the closest would have been Newcastle.
Right, yes.
That you would have had to have got those across here. So to be having oysters in central New South Wales in 1872. over here you can see that shows you what the $10 note looked like.
Okay.
And...
the original $10 note.
Yes, this is the original $10 note. And as you can see, they've done sort of images, sketches of the Holtermann photos. And the American Tobacco Warehouse is right here in this particular one. Right there, but as you can see, it says the Golgong Dispensary.
Yes.
But when you look over here, there's the American Tobacco Warehouse. Here's the Golgong Dispensary. They've used that sign on that building.
On that building.
For yes. that purpose, that you cannot have another country's name on your currency.
Mm. Did not know that.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. So, there's so much more here. You're only getting a very brief
view.
But let me take you and show you a couple of other, okay, rather interesting things. If you look at these lovely cameras here,
yes,
you've got this particular one down here, of course, this would have been your portrait camera.
Right.
Right. This would have been the one that you would have taken with you,
yes,
to actually do street scenes, etc.
Okay.
But we often hear that things really, about how modern society is different, right? But things haven't necessarily changed a lot. Let me show you on this screen here. Now, Holtermann.
Yes.
At the time that he found the nugget, he had his photograph taken, but he didn't like it. So if I can pull onto this particular one here, I'm going to come over here. So here's the original photo that he had taken,
right,
that he didn't like. So here's what he did. He had his photo taken with his hand on a coat hook,
okay,
and a backdrop.
Yes.
So then... here's the final photograph.
Yes.
So there's the backdrop, there's his front door and the cutout of the thing. But when you look closely, his hand is not actually sitting on that. You can see. So photoshopping in 1872.
Amazing.
Now, what is really interesting today, one of the things that's very much in for the younger kids is photo bombing.
Okay.
So photo bombing is when you get yourself into a photo that
yes.
you shouldn't be in. Now, remembering that I have said That you actually had to pay to have your photo taken.
Yes.
Now have a look at this wonderful butcher shop. Tell me, are you, Phil, are you going to eat that meat?
No, I don't think so. Would I? Should I?
Well, I think I'd be a bit concerned about eating it. I don't think I really want to eat it. When you look at it, it's actually hanging outside that store there. Now, all of these people have, in fact, actually paid to have their photo taken. But look in the back when I pull that one up there. Look there.
Ah, there's our photo bomber.
He photobombed. And there's quite a few of those when you start going. Looking through the Holterman collection, there are a lot of photos that are actually photobombed.
Amazing that Holterman didn't sort of see that guy in the background and go, hello,
well, remember,
who are
it was
you?
Probably Merlin or Bayliss, not Holterman. Remember, they were found in Holterman's house, and he was a sponsor, but the photographers were actually... photographs of the photographers were not Holterman.
So when was this discovered, the photo bomber? Like, when did they actually realise it was in there?
I have no idea. No? It's just really, you need to be able to pull that photo up and have a look closely
to see that
he's photo bombing.
Yep.
Now, you might remember I was talking about how they would secure the children's heads to stop them from actually moving.
Yes.
So let's go down here again. Now, this dear little boy is Augustus Gondorf.
Okay.
And that's one of the most famous Holterman photos. And you might look at that photo and see he looks somewhat startled.
He does.
So if you look down here, you can see that there's a stand.
Yes.
And if I hold that up, see how they've got his head in a...
I do. I can see that.
So that it's forced to the side and he can't move?
He can't actually move, yes.
No, he can't.
Chris, so... you're from the Holterman Museum, but you also know quite a bit about the town. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the town of Gulgong?
I have just a couple of really interesting things to tell you. So to begin with Gulgong, clay has been probably one of the most important things that has been mined here.
Okay.
And because of that, there are many world-renowned ceramicists live in this town and around this town.
Okay.
To bring it back to the actual town, you might look at these lovely streets and see how well they've been done to try and reproduce what would have been here in the time of the gold rush.
Yes.
So the streets are not actually cement. They are done so it looks as close to dirt as you can and pebbles.
Right.
And still retaining these fabulous... curbstones, mm-hmm. which are the original curbstones that were here in 1872.
Right.
But as you walk along, you may notice that there are all of these inserts into the pavement.
Yes.
Now, these are done by an international ceramicist by the name of Chester Neely.
Right.
And they are an international language.
Ah,
they are the language of swaggies and hobos and gypsies.
Right.
And so if you were... a swaggy or a gypsy or a hobo, and you stopped overnight, you could leave messages in sticks and stones for the next group of people coming through.
Right.
So as you walk along the streets of Gulgong, you can actually look at these particular inserts. If you come down here,
yeah,
you can
I can see there's another one there. That's
yes, but there's also not only lots of these, but...
So you say they represent
they
a
represent,
language or words?
They represent a language. And as you walk around town, you can actually see a guide.
Right.
Now, if you come into the Holterman Museum, we'll give you a guide.
Right. Okay.
Now, if you look at this, here's the guide here.
Okay.
So that one right there is this one here. You might like to see what that is.
That is Angry Dogs.
So you're not going to go into that particular property if you do get some work because there's going to be an angry dog.
Okay.
Now, of course, the challenge is to find out what's been put outside the pubs.
Okay, mm-hmm. So what I'll have to do is go to the pub.
You have to go and walk up past the pubs and see what's been placed there.
So you're saying that in front of every hotel we are going to see the same symbol, whether it says dangerous people
That's for me to find out. So
okay.
If you walk over here...
Right.
See, you'll see that this one here...
I'm going to look in advance. I've found it already.
Yes.
Dangerous drinking water.
So you're not going to drink the water there at that particular space?
Absolutely not. How amazing.
So as you walk around Golgong, you don't even have to go inside the buildings to be entertained. We entertain you while you walk up and down the street.
Fabulous idea. And look, I've learned something new because I had no idea that the hobos and the swagmen had their own actual language.
Hmm.
And it was just basically symbol on the ground, on the floor, in the dirt,
yes,
to indicate what was likely to be there, whether it be dangerous dogs or
yes,
dangerous drinking water and so yes, on and so forth.
Hmm. Or in this one.
In this one here, this is a good haystack for sleeping.
Yes, you can find somewhere to warm sleep.
Oh, Krishna, a wealth of information. Thank you so much for your time and giving us a little bit of an education about what these markings are on the streets in Golgong.
Okay, well, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sabala, Hilland and Chewina, their stories will always be told, and none can deny Araluan place in the history of gold. And written in Nagatsuk pipe, play home rule and Canadian league. The glittering history of Golgong is there for Australians to read. Loud were the shouts and the laughter when diggers with joy unrestrained went puddling around in the gutters there, picking up gold when it rained. And written in nuggets and pipe clay, home rule and Canadian lead. The glittering history of Golgong is there for Australians to read. Gleaming in quartz and in gravel there, glistening in clay and in loam, gold was the pillar of Golgong when Barney was king of the road. And written in nuggets and pipe clay, home rule and Canadian lead. The glittering history of Golgong is there for Australians to read. Talk of your cities and beaches, your writers and stories they've wrote, but there's stories galore still in Golgong, the town on the $10 note. And written in nuggets at pipe clay, home rule and Canadian lead. The glittering history of Golgong is there for Australians to read. And written in nuggets at pipe clay, home rule and Canadian lead. The glittering history of Golgong is there for Australians to read. When all our stories have ended and when all our memories grow dim, we'll take down the volumes of Lawson and drink the last bottle with him. And written in nuggets and pipe clay, home rule and Canadian lead. The glittering history of Golgong is there for Australians to read. And written in nuggets and pipe clay, home rule and Canadian lead. The glittering history of Golgong is there for Australians to read.
7th Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Welcome back, listeners. This is Phil C, and the show is Roman Oz, and we've got Jeff Diath with us today. How are you, Jeff?
Fighting fit, Phil.
Fabulous. And how is check weight going? Thriving business, getting too much work on now, I'm imagining.
Checkweight has been, the response is phenomenal at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned to you before we had the caravan camping expo back in February where I met you.
Yep.
And the response from that was overwhelming, actually. We're really heavily booked and, helping a lot of people understand caravan weight. So fabulous. That's really good.
That's fabulous. I know I'm getting an education, that's for sure. And so are my listeners. I mean, last week we had Rod from Victoria who sent us that email all about should he tow his caravan with his water tanks full. And we touched on tow ball weights. And today we're going to be talking all about tow ball weights, aren't we?
We are, okay. And it sometimes is a little bit hard to get your head around the whole tow ball weight.
Okay.
So bear with us, remember there's lots of blogs and articles on our website, checkweight.com.au, that you can actually go and refer to as well.
Fabulous. Well, that's the place you need to go, listeners, okay? That's checkweight.com.au. Very important. Don't be listening to salespeople. Don't be listening to the so-called experts in the caravan parks. If you want the correct information, that's the place you need to go. And Jeff's the person you need to talk to. So, Jeff,
Thanks, Phil.
Hey, my pleasure, my friend. Now, Jeff, tell us all about tow ball weights.
Okay, so I suppose the first thing that I'd like to point out with tow ball is that it actually is really important, but it's always changing. It's not a constant.
Okay.
And I suppose, well, what's the importance? Well, really, it's the difference between having a stable caravan and a swaying caravan.
Right.
And, so underlying is that if your tow ball weight is at the correct weight, then your caravan is more likely to be stable.
Right.
If it's too light, then the caravan is more likely to sway at a lower speed.
Okay.
So I can't tell you what that speed is, though. But as an example, if the caravan's nice and stable at 100 kilos and you've got the correct tow ball weight,
right,
and then it goes down, then it might be unstable at 100 kilos. And if you put... And if it gets too light, it might be unstable at 90 kilometres an hour.
Okay.
And I suppose that's one of the things that I get told all the time. Caravan, I've done 10,000 Ks in the caravan, and all of a sudden it started swaying. And you go, well, what's changed? And, I put a generator on the back. The water tanks were empty. And then I put a generator on the back, or we've put push bikes on the back of a caravan.
Mm.
So whenever you change the weight of the caravan, and it can be as simple as, putting a carton of beer at the back or under the bed.
Okay.
Yeah, it can change the weight. Wow. So my wife, Jules, who helps me behind the scenes in the business, always says that loading and unloading a caravan is a team sport.
Right.
So, if there's just, if you're a couple, make sure that you're aware of what other people are doing. If you've got kids, make sure that the kids aren't throwing a heap of weight in on the back of the caravan or the front and you don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it so important? So as I said, it's the means to an end. So we've got this connection where the tow ball hitches to the vehicle. And that's how the caravan gets towed behind.
Right.
So that weight of the tow ball, and I work on 10% of the GTM.
Mm-hmm.
We did acronyms a few weeks ago.
Yes.
So that's the gross trailer mass.
Right.
So your tow ball weight should be around 10% of the GTM, so the hitched weight.
Right.
So if your hitched weight is 2.5 tons, so 2,500 kilograms, then your tow ball weight should be around 250.
Okay.
240 is going to be fine, 260 is going to be fine.
Okay.
Five or six kilos are not going to make a difference.
Okay.
But 10 or 20 can start to make a difference.
Ah, okay.
Now, a lot of magazines and a lot of articles, they'll say, 8 to 12% is sort of the range. And even in Europe, they'll have 5% and 7%. And I see that on forums every now and then. People go, 7% in Europe, that's fine, so it's fine here.
Mm.
Well, guess what? We're not in Europe. The caravans are very, very different in Australia. Our roads are very, very different.
Yep.
You know, they're rougher. You have got more potholes. And our vehicles are different. So I really don't like that comparison to Europe.
Okay.
Standard.
Yep.
So if we start off at 10% of GTM, then we've got a little bit of leeway either way.
Okay.
Okay. So I've mentioned if our tow ball weight is light, then the caravan may sway.
Right.
What if it's too heavy?
Okay.
Well, if your caravan tow ball weight is too heavy, it's actually adding weight to the vehicle.
Right.
And it's adding weight to the rear axle.
Okay.
So if you are right on the limit of your GVM, gross vehicle mass, and then you add a heap of weight to the caravan and add, say, 40 or 50 kilos to your tow ball, that's 50 kilos getting added to your vehicle.
Right.
So that's less payload in your vehicle.
Okay.
More importantly, and this one's a bit hard to get your head around, it's adding around 150% to your rear axle.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So I've tested it a few times, and there is an engineering formula that you can work out the length between your rear axle and the tow ball.
Yes.
But generally, when I've tested it, it's anywhere between 140 and 160% of the tow ball weight gets added to your rear axle. So if you've got a tow ball weight of 250 and you add, that's adding 375 kilos.
Right.
To your rear axle.
Wow. Okay.
If your tow ball goes to 300, then it becomes 450 kilos on your rear axle.
Okay.
So it's a substantial increase.
Okay.
And when you add weight to your rear axle, you take it off the front.
Mm.
And that's why you get light steering, front wheel braking is affected.
Okay.
So that's why your tow ball, if you start off pretty close to that 10%, then as you travel around this, you know, great country of ours or the States or wherever you're allowed to go at the moment, you've got a little bit of variation.
Okay.
You know, you add some, you know, a carton of beer at the back, it's not going to matter.
Right.
You know, you use a bit of water, it's not going to matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does indeed. And this is why I think people should really make sure they know what they're doing, because I've met a chap in Tasmania who said he had 10 kilograms to play with, and he had a 200 series and a large caravan. I think it was a Jayco Silverline Outback, and he had 10 kilograms to play with. And his wife came back with a lump of human pine that she wanted him to turn into a coffee table top, and he nearly had a heart attack. It took two of them to put it in the car. So he was well and truly overweight because he was just way too close with his figures.
And I see a lot of people in that case, you know, like they're very similar, but are getting weighed before they do a lap or a half lap of Australia.
Yep.
And they're almost at their limit. So
yes.
I thought, well, what are you going to collect? What
exactly.
else are you going to buy as you're traveling around?
Yep.
So you've got to make allowance for that.
Yep.
And, you know, your tow ball weight to me is probably, it's one of the things that I actually see probably the worst.
Yep.
It, you know, very few people have correct tow ball weight.
Mm-hmm.
I go plus or minus 1%, you know, so 9 to 11.
Yep.
So if you get weighed and you're, you know, 8.9, you get a cross. If you're 9.2, you get a tick.
Yep.
But I still recommend that people get to that 10% as a starting point.
Yep.
Now, with tow ball weights, when we weigh a caravan at check weight, what we do is we then move weight around the caravan to show you how the tow ball is changed.
Yep.
And one of the things that blows people away is that I open the caravan door and they're watching, because I should probably explain first.
Yes.
Our tow ball weigher is not the super cheap or the little cylindrical one you buy from your car retailer.
Yep.
So, you know, that costs $60. Ours cost about $1,800. It's digital, it's calibrated, and it's accurate to half a kilo.
Right.
Okay, so very, very sensitive. When a caravan's sitting just on the concrete and there's a bit of wind, our tow ball will change. It'll flicker.
Okay.
So what I do is I get the clients to watch the tow ball weight digital readout, and I open the caravan door.
Yes.
And it changes depending on which way the door goes, but if the door comes forward, it'll change the tow ball weight by about a kilo and a half to 2 kilos heavier.
Okay.
If I the door goes back
mm-hmm.
and you open the door, it'll change the total weight by about 1.5 kilos lighter.
Okay.
Because the weight of the door has transferred weight to the back of the caravan.
To the rear, yeah, yeah.
And that's really a sort of a wow moment for a lot of people. And they go, you only open the door and the total weight has changed.
Yep.
Now, as I say to everybody, I'm not suggesting you drive down the road with the door open. but I just want to show them how sensitive it is to weight transfer.
For weight transfer, yeah.
And then I put weight around the caravan and show them the percentage that goes on the tow ball or the percentage that goes on the wheel.
Okay.
And then that way people can make good decisions because they've got good knowledge.
Yes.
The little tow ball weighers that you buy from the retailers go in 10-kilo increments and they're not particularly accurate.
No.
And I had a gentleman one day who said, oh, I know, I was on the phone, he said, I put a generator on the box and everything on the back and it didn't make any difference. And I said, it would have made a big difference. And he said, no, he said, I had a tow ball weigher and he said it was the same after I put the generator on the back.
Yep.
And I said, did you wind it up and down? And he said, why? And I said, because these are spring-loaded things, so you can put weight at the back and it's not going to change. But if you wind it up and down, it probably then would have changed.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then when I actually subsequently weighed him and I put weight at the back of the caravan on his generator box, I showed him that it took 50% of the weight off the tow ball.
Off the tow ball. So, wow.
Yeah.
50%.
So, yeah. And I must say here, every caravans are slightly different, although most are similar. And generally it can be anywhere between 40 and 60%.
Okay.
But generally, mostly about 50. So when he put the generator in the generator box, which all up weighed about 32 kilos off the top of my head, I think, from memory, that took 16 Ks off his tow ball.
Wow. Okay. And that's pretty critical, isn't it? 16 kilos.
Okay. If he was a few bit over, then it's not as critical. But if he was under already, then that 16 kilos
off
could have mean the difference of him swaying or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been that tipped him over. And I suppose, I don't like people who put weight at the back to decrease your tow ball weight because it's making a seesaw worse.
Okay.
What we should be doing if our tow ball is heavy is moving weight back, from the front toolbox down to the bed or over the axle.
Okay.
To decrease the tow ball weight.
Rather than just hang everything off the back.
Yeah. So you need to be really careful with your tow ball weight. I see on Facebook all the time somebody will comment, we checked our tow ball weight before we left. Ours is good.
Yep.
It's changing all the time.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, listeners, I hope you're listening and not just listening but really absorbing, because the difference between having a happy holiday with no dramas and not could be the difference between placing a case of beer and a case of wine in the wrong position in your caravan or probably the back of your vehicle even, if it's going to make such a difference to your rear axle if you're already skating on those areas.
Yeah, and I've actually fixed the tow ball weight, when we've weighed them, and it's been a bit light, not overly light.
Mm-hmm.
And, go in the caravan and say, your carton of water that you've put there at the back or carton of beer, and actually moved it to the under the bed.
Yep.
And then their tow ball weight is dead on 10%.
Wow.
So it can be that simple sometimes.
Okay.
Maybe the caravan's a little bit light and they've got a lot of stuff in the back, like a generator in the generator box at the back and it's poles and things like that, that can make a difference.
Okay.
I weighed a guy recently, brand new caravan. I'd weighed him before and then he updated his caravan, so he got me back. And he'd put a pole carrier the day before on the back of the caravan because he thought his tow ball weight would be a bit heavy. We actually found it to be light. So while I was packing up, he took the pole carrier off, and then he had two jerry can holders that were at the back that he was never going to use, and he took those off. And it was funny, those jerry can holders, the two of them weighed 15 kilos.
Okay.
So those themselves were taking 7.5 kilos off the tow ball weight. So when he took the jerry can holders and the poles off, his tow ball weight was only a couple of kilos under then.
Okay.
So he was able to redistribute the weight to the front mm-hmm. put the poles on the front and get his toe ball weight correct.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't have probably figured that out without you and check weight. Or he could have figured it out at a much heavier price.
Absolutely, and I see that a lot where people make major changes to their van and then they get it weighed and then they realise that they've made bad decisions. I always suggest getting it weighed by a mobile weigher, get that accurate information.
Yep.
A weighbridge, a public weighbridge will give you certain information, which mm-hmm. is valuable, but mobile weighers tend to give you a lot more pertinent information for your circumstance.
Definitely what we want. Fabulous chat with you, Jeff, as always. We're going to wind this one up now. What can I play for you this afternoon?
Oh, okay, well, how about we go with Genga Jing?
Yes.
And it's a song, it's called The Sound of Then, but this is Australia.
This is Australia, and it is Australia, and it's a great Australian song, and you're a great Australian yourself. Thank you so much for your time today, Jeff. Jeff Diaf, listeners from Check Weight, if you want to know anything about it, go to his website, checkweight.com.au. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thanks, Phil. You have a great week. We'll talk to you next week, and in the meantime, travel safe.
Have you got a subject for next week?
Oh, yeah, we better do that.
We better do that.
Look, let's... We've sort of referred to, compliance plates before, I think.
Yes.
Let's talk about compliance plates and how to get the right information off them.
Okay.
It might be a little bit dry, but it's quite interesting.
Okay, let's do that. Compliance plates next week, folks, with Jeff Diaf from Check Weight, and we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after Ganga Jang's Sounds of Then.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.